you want to talk about? You have anything you brought? Did you watch the games this weekend?
I watched the Club World Cup this weekend. I did not watch the Premier League this weekend. What about you?
Well, naturally, I had to watch Arsenal, even though it was very difficult to watch. I'm not going to lie. Did you see by any chance the double yellow Gabriel Martinelli got?
I saw the first one. I didn't see the second one.
It was within a 30-second span. I don't know who was throwing it out. I think Podence was throwing it. This was Wolves and Arsenal. I think Podence was throwing the ball in, and Martinelli pushed him. He was upset. He felt he had got fouled, so he was going for a throw-in, and Martinelli pushed him. And the ref played on because Wolves had advantage, and he shoves down the attacker who's running down. It might have been... Who's the right back for Wolves?
Semedo? Obviously, it's not a Adama.
Semedo. It was Semedo.
Semedo, yeah.
Semedo was up, and he shoved him down, and he just gave him two consecutive yellows.
Wow.
And apparently, that's only happened two other times
in the last
25
years. So it wasn't
straight red.
It was two separate fouls.
Then. Yeah, it was just two yellows. So the debate is, what is that? Can they do that? Like, is he allowed? Should they have not called it back for the first yellow? If it was, that first one was already a yellow, you just were going to allow play to continue and then just go
right.
Successive yellows?
Right. Okay. So originally the ref let the play go on for the first yellow is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then he fouled a second time.
In the same span of play.
In the same span of play. See, that's a tough one because if it was really a poor foul, I can see why the ref would send him off. But if you're looking at it from a fan perspective, I feel like you got to bring play back because the play was basically dead when the foul went.
Yeah.
As a ref, you should probably bring play back, I feel like. Wait, was there a clear advantage to letting the play go?
There was. That's the thing. You know,
okay.
He was pretty open on the wing. Semedo was pretty open on the wing. I don't know. It could have been seen as a goal-scoring opportunity as well. And then he could have let play on go for that.
Okay.
Like me being an Arsenal fan, I'm very biased to this. And I was really upset when I originally saw it. But, after trying to
you can
like,
understand
a little bit, I do understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I reffed for, I don't know, inconsistently. I reffed inconsistently, I might add. But, I don't know. I think you have to understand that that was the only thing he could do. People were going to be upset with him either way. If he had called the yellow back, if he had given Martinelli the yellow and not let play to continue, which was on almost maybe a goal-scoring play, people would have been pissed or would have been upset at him anyways.
Yeah, I completely agree. What was the final score of that game?
It was 1-0.
Okay.
That was in the red was, what, in the 60, early 60th minute.
Okay.
You
guys still got the win, though. So.
We did. We were up before.
Who scored for you guys?
Goodness. I'm trying to. God, I'm getting called out.
Oh, Gabriel.
Oh, I think it was Gabriel. Yeah, it was a scuffed goal though.
Oh, was.
Yeah, it was. I think it was just a bobble in, and he just happened to be at the right place.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes complete sense. If we look at through the match day weekend, we saw United with another draw.
Oh yes, United
under the new coach Ragnarok, I believe his name.
I don't know. Ragnarok.
Ragnarok. Not Ragnarok. not. Yeah, not Ragnarok. He's a. He was the ex-director of football at Leverkusen.
Okay.
And before that, he was the director of football at Hoffenheim in Germany. And from what I've heard about him, he's got lots of – what's the word? He's got lots of positives about him just from in Germany about his play style. He's very known for – like he's known for like old school like tiki taka football.
Okay,
the
beautiful game.
He is. I think he's a very good coach for Man United, but he's had an unlucky start. It has to be said.
I absolutely agree. It's really tough to where Southampton placed in the table right now. I'm not sure, but it's really hard to have the skill and honestly the money that Man United has right now, and to be like they're keeping up in the race. But in all honesty, with a player like Ronaldo, they should be doing better than they are. And they're bringing it back a little bit, but there was a stretch of, I don't know how many games, or they lost a lot of games. Liverpool, 5-0 to Liverpool, 4-2 to Leicester, 1-0 to West Ham, 1-0 to Aston Villa. That's a tough little streak.
The debate is, like, was getting rid of old
Bullet?
Yeah, was it worth old. It? Like, because when it comes to when it comes to my perspective, I think Ole was a very good coach when it comes to when it came to securing top four every year. He was a very good coach when he first came in 2019, I believe, after they sacked Mourinho. He had that really good comeback against PSG where Lukaku and Rashford had those goals in the extra time to send them to the semifinals.
Oh, okay.
So there was a big boost. There was a big confidence boost when it came to bringing Ole in. But it has to be said that he's a good transition coach. But when it comes down to if he's going to challenge for a trophy, he's not going to win you a trophy. And that's the truth when it comes to him. He's a great man manager. Like, okay. From what I heard, the players loved him. Like, I heard Maguire loved him. Rashford loved him. All the English players were very fond of him. And he's a Man United legend, so it has to be said they looked up to him.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely time to move on, but... When they sacked him, they were still like fifth or sixth in the league. Like, yeah. They were still in a good position.
Well, how long did he coach for? What was the? It wasn't long.
He didn't. I mean, he coached from February of 2019, I believe, to October or November, whenever he was fired.
In 2021.
So it was a little over a year. So okay. A year and a half, I'd say he was a coach.
All right. Okay. I was gonna maybe make the argument that you have to. Maybe give him some credit, like trust the processes. Like,
he had a full season in the 19 with the COVID season.
When
there was no fans with 2021, he had that full season, and I can't remember where they finished, but it was definitely top four because they were in the Champions League.
Yeah,
this season.
That's such a little blip in time.
Right,
we were just watching all the games, and there was no spectators, and they would.
Yeah,
I don't know what services would do it, but they would pipe in
the fan noise.
Yeah, the fan noise. Yeah. That bothered me. It was bizarre to just see the empty stadiums. Yeah.
At the start, I thought it was really cool, but then it just bothered the heck out of me. So
I liked hearing the players talk.
Yeah,
you know, when they didn't add in that noise,
I could hear all of the
conversations that they were having.
Right,
and like you playing soccer, me playing soccer. You know, it's really incredible to be able to listen to the on-field conversations that the best players in the world are having.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, when I watched the Champions League final, afterwards, it was PSG-Bayern. They put out the non-fan noise, so I got to listen to everything they said. And it was just very cool hearing, like, the coaches, like, Tuchel, and I forget the Bayern coach at the time. I can't remember the top of my head, but it was very interesting hearing the directions they were giving out to their players. And, of course, the players on the pitch, you could hear everything that all the directions they were pointing out to the other – everything they needed to get from their captains, from their defenders, like telling people where to go. It was just very intriguing to watch, and I thought that was a very cool part of the non-fan period.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I want to ask your opinion on something that's very controversial when it comes to the Premier League, at least in recent times, is the use of VAR. How do we feel about VAR?
VAR has never been the problem, in my opinion. It's always been the referees. Like, VAR has, if...
Do you think VAR
is a benefit to the... when they first introduced VAR, the 2018 World Cup, it was used fantastically.
Right, okay.
It was used really well, and I think part of that was because the referees were giving the correct calls. Like, VAR, I don't think is a problem, because VAR is simply just the video assistant referee. It's just showing the replays to the refs. It's a ref's decision
that's true.
What to go with there. So if the ref is giving a really soft penalty, it's on the ref. It's not on VAR. VAR is just showing them what happened.
Yeah, you know? Okay. I get what you mean. But, you know, I feel like you still have to blame VAR a little bit for it, because... I was okay with having poor referees make bad decisions when they didn't have all the information. But now, when I see something that's like clearly a penalty or something that should immediately be overturned, and they just don't even consider it. It pops up it says like a checking review or VAR review for 3 seconds, and then they don't even bother. I'm like, that bothers me. That makes me really upset, because if we can see things that are happening, I wish there was an Arsenal game in the last, I think, 3 or 4 games where this happened.
What specifically? Like, do you remember the play?
No, I don't think it was. Oh man, there's no way I'm gonna be able to pull it out of thin air. But
nah, you're good.
The other thing that VAR is, I'm just raging on VAR, but it has taken away more goals than it has given. The purpose of VAR originally was supposed to give more goals. It was supposed to you know, fix for penalties and handballs and offsides. And but there, it's gotten so down to the like pinky finger of somebody being a little bit offsides that they can measure.
Yeah.
To where like I don't even, is that worth
okay,
it?
Okay. Yeah. When it comes to that, like someone being a pinky finger offside, I know exactly what you mean.
I've seen it happen.
I think all of us have seen it happen. It's annoying because when the VAR wasn't in use, when was the first season they used VAR? Was it 1920?
I think it was 1920.
So before 1920, it was down to the referee's eyes. You know, I remember a goal during the 18-19 season where Azpilicueta scored a goal to secure his top four where he was a mile offside. And there was no VAR review. It was against Huddersfield. And they were in like 19th or 20th at the time, so they needed that draw to stay in the promotion, stay in the league. So it was a very controversial moment because he was way offside. It was ridiculous how the ref didn't see this. So when you're looking at stuff like that where VAR wasn't in use, it's like, wow, you just screwed over a team that's, you know, in the bottom of the league that doesn't have nearly as much money as a team that's in the top four. It's owned by a billionaire.
Yeah.
So I can see the argument for both sides, but I think overall you need to have VAR because human error is going to happen so frequently if you're not having video assistant referee in use.
I get where you're coming from. But honestly, I think that human error is part of the game. I think that the refs making bad calls or making questionable, that's the whole point. It's supposed to be up to the decision of the referee, who is a human who will make mistakes. He doesn't have all the information.
Right.
And the more that we
help them,
we muddle it a little bit, we muddy the waters where we give him the final decision, but now we're giving him a lot more information, and why don't we just switch? Why don't we just go all the way over? Why doesn't everyone wear like a chip on their embedded in their jerseys where it like keeps track of where they are and it can mark them as offsides or not at any time? Why do they even have that?
I see where you're coming from there because I can see why human error can be a huge part of the game, because at the end of the day, if you keep adding more and more technology to English football or football in general, you're kind of setting a tone for the future where it's going in a different direction. And a lot of people who watch the game when VAR was in use would completely agree with what your point is, saying that referees making bad calls is just part of what's going to happen. And I can completely see why you would say that. So,
yeah, you know, it makes me think of you know the Watford Leicester, this famous Watford Leicester game.
Oh, the Dini.
Yeah, with Dini.
Dini, yeah.
Who was it? Knockhart. I think it was Knockhart that
he saved
went
it, yeah.
down. No, yeah, Knockhart. No, Almunia. Almunia was a goalkeeper.
Yes.
But Knockhart went down in the box in like the 94th minute.
Right.
And it was complete flop. That was completely a flop. Nobody was close to him. And you looked back, and even the announcers were like, "Oh wow, this is a simulation." And you know, if they had like that, they called it. They called a penalty, and they gave him that.
Right.
And we wouldn't have had such a crazy dramatic moment if that hadn't happened, because that juiced Watford up. They were all the fans. This was at the home stadium,
right?
And they had all just watched this man flop in the box in the final minutes of the game. And then they take it back and they score and they put it in the back of the net.
That was probably one of the best games of all time in English football. And the thing is that, like you said, that never happens if the referee never makes that mistake in the first place. Like Watford go through pretty easily. And
exactly.
Dini scoring the winner there was ridiculous. I've watched that game over so many times, and Just the distribution from the keeper and then the whole counterattack was just executed perfectly.
It was so well done.
Yeah.
It did help that Leicester was all over the place. They couldn't believe that. Almunia saved it twice. The first shot was mediocre, but the second one, Knockhart tried to chip it over the top of him and he put his hand up. And the reaction time, it's incredible. And then they brought it back, and then you see Troy Deeney jump into the stands with all the fans.
Yeah. What would you say are some of the best games in English history? And the Premier, not just the Premier League, just all of
the
series.
Can I say, like, the best ones are the ones that I enjoy the most?
Let's just say the best ones, because I know as an Arsenal fan, you're going to pick an Arsenal game.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, you're going to pick that Arsenal game where Ozil had that ridiculous two-assist The dummy against Leicester. You remember that game?
What? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that was... What was that? Was that... Aubameyang put that in? Aubameyang just chipped it over? Yeah. Oh, that's so incredible. Yeah, I know.
That was... I'm not...
Don't get me started on that. I'll just talk about it.
I'm not an Arsenal fan at all, but Ozil's one of my favorite players I've ever watched in the Premier League.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ozil is... honestly, he's one of the guys that really got me into soccer in the first place.
Yeah.
He was one of the first soccer jerseys I ever had. I had the original number 10 Ozil.
Number 10.
In the Arsenal kit. It was one of the...
16, 17, 15, 16?
I think it was 15, 16.
15, 16, yeah. 15, 16. That was the second season there, I think.
Yeah, right? But that's... You know, he was playing so well with him and Sanchez, and...
He almost broke the assist record that season.
I didn't even know that.
Against Thierry Henry had it. He was one assist away from breaking it that season. Ooh, yeah.
Wow.
You guys should have won the league that year, I'm not going to lie.
It is what it is. Yeah. And then it all went downhill after that. where did we finish? Like 8th? 11th?
No, 15-16?
No, not 15-16. I'm saying over the last span of years. What, it's been like 8th?
I
think 8th was the worst. 8th
is the worst you've been, but it's been like between like 6th and 8th the last couple years. It's just been a combination of poor ownership and poor management, I'd say.
What do you mean? I mean, okay, I guess, are you saying management as in the Kroenke family, like the people who own it?
I mean... You know, the Kroenke, you know what happened yesterday? The Kroenke family just won a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, so, true. Yeah.
They clearly don't care enough for Arsenal at all because they own the best team in the NHL. They own now the best team in the NFL that just won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
And they own the Denver Nuggets, which is one of the best teams in the NBA. They clearly don't care enough for Arsenal.
Don't care.
I think that's the problem. They put all their money and resources into American leagues.
You're making me, you're giving me some things to think about here, Garb. I'm not going to lie. I think Unai Emery was...
He was a good top four coach.
I think he was okay. Yeah,
he was okay. He wasn't
I think he was
great.
Okay.
He was okay, though, yeah.
He brought in some decent players. I think
He brought Abba in, right?
Yeah. But, well, Aubameyang played mediocre the first season he was there. A killer the second season.
He had a killer second. Well, because he came in the January transfer window.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
The season after the January transfer window, which was 18-19, he had like 30, almost 30.
He was a
goals.
Monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was crazy. And then we're not really sure what happened. You know, he signed the $100 million contract.
And then it just
made
fell
a
apart.
Big deal about it.
Yeah.
Put it on Instagram all over the place and was talking about how he wanted to be an Arsenal legend. And then...
He was terrible. He was awful.
He wouldn't even go to a ball that was 4 feet in front of him. You know, he would just wait. And if the ball wasn't passed directly to him, he wouldn't do anything about it.
Because you remember, like, in his Dortmund days, in his early Arsenal days, he was explosive.
Exactly. Well, that's one of the reasons why we bought him, was because of his speed. He was so fast off a break. And he just didn't... I don't know what happened. I really don't know what happened. He was arguably maybe at the end of his prime when he was really, really good, but he was still... He should have done better than he has.
Right, because you guys did sign him when he was either 29 or 30, so he was definitely, like, in his peak of his prime. So
exactly.
He performed, like, his first 2 years there, but even, like, at 32, 33, he should still be, like...
He should still be a threat.
He should be
an attacking threat,
period. You're not washed at 32 years old, you know?
Yeah, Arsenal doesn't have... I don't want to just spill out over Arsenal, but this is all I do anyways.
No.
But... You know, we don't have a striker right now, and it's a problem. It's a really serious problem.
See, you guys have Lacazette, who's inconsistent.
He's
doesn't score goals all the time.
He has to. Aubameyang's gone now.
Martinelli is young.
Could play striker. We haven't played him there.
Yeah, he always put him on the wing, correct?
He's always out on the wing. And
yeah.
He is a striker. He is a striker.
Right.
He has potential. You know.
I'm not particularly a big Martinelli guy. I know you are. But he reminds me a lot of Timo Werner. So he's a big
true.
They play
exactly except he
like,
scores.
They don't get a lot of goals. I don't think Martinelli has like 2-3 league goals in the past, since he signed for Arsenal.
Are you kidding?
Yeah,
me?
Yeah, he's like,
he has two or three league goals.
I think
he has
one of those.
I think he has two or three this season.
Okay, let's just say he's a max 6 goals. Same thing as Timo Werner. Timo Werner and him both can't dribble at all whatsoever. Right. They're both.
Did you just say he can't dribble?
Yeah,
that's his best. That's his best attribute. No, absolutely, it's better than a shooting.
Nah, Martinelli cannot dribble, bro.
Are you kidding me?
Did you not see him make two?
It wasn't Spurs.
I saw that game. It was against. I was with you. I believe it was against Norwich, right?
I think it was against Norwich.
It was Norwich.
That was
a good goal.
I'm not saying that he's the Brazilian incarnation of Thierry Henry, but he's good. He is very good, and some of the goals that he scores. By the end of a lot of the games that we play, in our most recent game against Liverpool, They had Alexander Arnold ended up man marking. Klopp had him man mark Martinelli
because Martinelli can get in behind defenses so easily.
Exactly. But that's what he was doing, and he was cutting them apart. He was absolutely cutting them apart. And Klopp was like, "Okay, we have to stop this right now." And he just put him. He's like, "You follow him around."
Yeah. You make a good point there, Trent. When Trent man marks you, you know you're a big threat to the team. You know you're gonna score. Yep. You know they think you can score in them. So. I can see why you're big on Martinelli. I'm just not fully convinced by him right now.
He's got 4 goals and 2 assists this season alone.
All right, that's solid. How old is he? Like 22, 21?
He's 21.
21. Okay. So
he's 20. He's 20.
So that's pretty good.
He had more goals last season.
What do you have last season? 6, 7?
I don't know how to get to the last season.
Arsenal
fixtures. I don't think I can.
No, you can check. You can just go to Martinelli's Insta stat.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Insta. Yeah.
Not sponsored by anything, but if All Football ever wants to sponsor, let me know. 15 appearances, 11 goals. I can't get. There's no way.
I got the stats up here, so.
Okay, you're using some good man.
Let me just go by here. All seasons, overall balance show.
Who do you think's the most influential player on Chelsea
right now? Oh, in Chelsea.
Wait.
Also. Okay, sorry. Before we get to that, let me just go on Martinelli's stats. So, he has in 43 Prem appearances, he's 9 goals and 3 assists, which is pretty solid.
That's not great.
Yeah. In the Europa League, he has 3 goals, 3 assists in 13 appearances, which is actually solid.
I'm not mad about that.
And it's only 500 minutes because some of them could have been sub appearances. Yeah. And then the EFL Cup, he has 8 appearances, 5 goals, 2 assists, which is pretty good too.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know I'd say he's pretty inconsistent. I mean, he's young though. He's young.
If he has an explosive season, those stats are not going to mean anything.
True. You know, we just saw what happened. You know, with him literally getting 2 consecutive yellow cards.
Right.
That was just him being upset. He was angry. He felt like he got fouled. He didn't get the call. Got up. Pushed Podence, who was throwing the ball in, and then ran down the attacker and shoved him from behind. He was just upset.
Right.
That's just discipline. It's a lack of discipline.
Right. No, yeah. As you were asking before, who I think the most influential player in Chelsea is, this season's been a really bore to watch me and Chelsea fan. Just we win games, but they're always by 1-0, 1-2-1. It's stuff like we play really boring football, and
that's kind of Tuchel's method, though. I won't lie.
I'm not. Yeah, no. He knows that it's successful, but it's so boring.
Yeah, it's not fun to watch. Sometimes.
Like Don't get me wrong, Thomas Tuchel. I think he's the best coach in the world right now. He won the Champions League. He just won the Club World Cup. He got to the FA Cup final. He won the Super Cup in the summer. So he's won 3 trophies in 2021 alone.
Yeah.
2021/2022.
Yeah, really
he's only been
that.
Here for a year and a month, so he's successful. But if you break down the team, I would say the most influential player to the team is Thiago Silva. I think he's the best player on our team.
Okay.
I know he's 37. He's 37 years old, but he's been the best defender probably in the Prem in the last year, I think. He's been ridiculous. He's kept we've had the most clean sheets in the Premier League. He was a monster in our Champions League run.
Yes, he was.
I'm a big Thiago Silva fan. I think he's probably your best player. I know a lot of Chelsea fans would say Mason Mount, but I think I think people are very, when it comes to Mason Mount, they overrate him a lot. Like, I'm a big Mason Mount fan, but you just watch it. People who when they debate Mason Mount, I believe they come to a conclusion that he's a final product. Like he's gonna be our best player for the next couple of years, and they think he's undroppable in Thomas Tuchel's team, which is just I think it's untrue because he is very inconsistent. If I watch him week in week out, he's a great player. I think he's one of the best. He's a top 5 player on the team. I'm not gonna lie, but he's really overrated by some people in the fans.
Okay.
He can't cross the ball too well. His set pieces are very, very bad, in my opinion. Like, I'd rather have Hakim Ziyech on it, or even what's his name? I'd have
I don't know.
I think Hakim has really good set pieces, Hudson-Odoi is decent at set pieces. Like, I'm not a big Hudson-Odoi guy, but he's pretty.
He's okay.
He's good set pieces, but yeah. Back to Mason Mount. He's the most goals and assists combined on our team this year. I think it's like 13 G/8 in the Premier this season, which is pretty solid numbers, but
that is really good.
Just four of them came against Norwich City. Two of them came against Burnley, and then so one came against. Yeah. So if you just break them down, they're not against the teams that you. They're very. They came in the span of like a month, and then since before that month he was playing pretty poor, and since then he's been out in and out of the team. So yeah, I think Mason Mount is an essential player to team. I just don't think right now he's the best. He's the best option for the team right now. So.
Okay.
I think if you want to play our attack, I think Hakim Ziyech is like undroppable right now. He's been our best attacker the last month, I'd say.
Okay, maybe in the last month.
But overall, he's like, had some times where I've been a big Ziyech hater the past 2 years because he's been horrible for us.
I'm not even gonna lie.
He scored a golazo the other day against Spurs, though. If you didn't see it, He from outside the box, he curled it around Lloris. It was a crazy goal, but it was like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and that was what kind of cemented his place in the team in the attack. And then I know Tuchel always goes three at top, so he goes Hakim on the right, and then at striker he's been rotating a lot between Lukaku and Havertz because Lukaku, he's been all the drama with Lukaku the past two months. Lukaku's been in and out of the team, and I don't want to go in a whole rant about Lukaku because I have my own thoughts about him.
Okay.
But, you know, he has 10 goals for the team, but he's just been very inconsistent. So, what are your thoughts on that?
So honestly, I'm gonna not heed your warnings, and I want to talk about Lukaku a little bit. And if I were in his position, I think we ended up talking about this a little bit over the text at some point when you told me about what happened. If I was in his position and I came from an inter team, an inter squad where I was
the main man.
Exactly. It was the superstar. Getting all the minutes I want, doing really, really well, just very successful.
Yeah.
And he now gets purchased for almost 100. A record fee.
It was a record fee.
It was a record fee. And he comes to this team and he's benched and he's not given any priority. And you know, that's a selfish thing, I guess, from my perspective. I would probably be not unhappy with that. You know, it doesn't matter how much I was purchased for. You know, if I go from being the best on a team and doing well and being successful and not really
the incentive is, you know, he was a Chelsea player in 2013. He looked up to Drogba his whole life and he wanted to do like a I'm back type of thing. And you know, I get that, but it's like a little cinematic. You know, he was already in a position. We didn't need Lukaku because we already had a striker. We kind of had Havertz. We had Havertz, and he's an inconsistent, but he's 21 years old. He can be that guy for the future.
Yeah,
Lukaku is in the prime of his career. He just won the Serie A Golden Boot. He got to the Europa League final, which they lost, but he was great that game. Mm-hmm. He had a goal. He just had a great Euro. He's coming off a Euro where he was the top scorer of the Euro 2020 last year. He was in great form. Like he was at the peak of his career. He had no reason to join Chelsea, but he chose to.
Yeah.
And when he got here, he did an interview saying that he missed Inter Milan it was 3 months into his career here. Like, come on, man, you can't be doing that.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't really make any sense. That's kind of, I guess, what the point. Like, I understand what you're saying. You know, it's a Champions League potentially winning team. And,
right.
But I just don't.
I think he should have stayed in Inter, personally.
I think he should have stayed
He had a great relationship with, who was it, Lautaro Martinez, right?
He had a great
striker partnership. The only problem with Inter, which I can see from his perspective, was Inter went bankrupt and they lost Antonio Conte because he realized he was in a bad position. He couldn't stay there because they couldn't afford to pay him, so he left. And they were forced to sell Hakimi to PSG the same summer. So Lukaku lost Hakimi. Right. They lost Eriksen. They just sold Eriksen the other day to who'd they sell him to? Do you remember? They just sold him.
I didn't even know they sold him.
Eriksen just joined a team in the Premier League the other day.
What?
Yeah.
God, I really got to pay attention to the waiver wire.
Who was it? It was. He just joined Brentford, actually.
He joined
Brentford. Like Inter was selling all their stars because they couldn't afford to pay any of these guys. So when the chance to sell Lukaku for 100 million came, and they couldn't afford because they were basically almost bankrupt. They had to sell them.
Okay, well, so, that makes so much more sense now.
So, yeah, I can see from the perspective of Inter why they wanted to sell him. But at the same time, when you're in Lukaku's position, you're in a team that's challenging for the Serie A title. You're the best player in the league. At least one of the best player in the leagues. Like, yeah, you're just not going to be happy that you're, I don't know. I can see why he's not happy, because he's going from that situation to a situation where he's not guaranteed a starting spot every week. He has to work his way into the team.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem when it comes to Lukaku. I think I've been a Lukaku fan since 2015. He's been one of my favorite players, but even I can't really defend his actions recently. And he's going to have to work his way back into the team at some point. I personally still have belief in him. I don't know about other Chelsea fans, but...
yeah, that's what he's got. He's got to work his way back into the good graces of all the Chelsea fans and the
coach. Right, because he's one of the most... Like, he was getting booed to the other day at Stamford Bridge, which I completely get. Like... The same thing about, he's like watching Aubameyang the last couple of years.
Oh, I was just about to say.
He doesn't run for balls. He doesn't make runs. He waits. And it's so frustrating. Like, as me, like, I'm watching Lukaku. He's just standing there. He's like a statue. He just walks. It's ridiculous. Like, he's not trying to make any runs. And Inter Lukaku would be making, when he was unconfident, top of his game, he'd be making runs. He'd be tweaking defenses. It was absolutely crazy watching him, and he just needs to find that form and confidence back. And I think he can, but, you know, other people are skeptical about
it. It's going to take time, if anything, you know. Correct. It's just going to take time.
Yeah.
He's probably, you know, he hasn't settled into the reality of what has actually occurred now, and he has to really work for this team. It's not a given to him, as you said.
It is not a given to him, yeah. Like, as you know, like, you can say the same for Pulisic. He's been out of the team for ages now, and it's looking likely that he's going to be sold in the summer, in my opinion. But
where do you think he'll go?
I think Pulisic should go to, like, he's my favorite player ever. Like, I want him to stay and fight for his position here, but he's good enough to be on a team where he should be starting week in, week out. And for his game to progress, he's 23 now. He's not near his prime.
Yep.
But he should be on a team where he's starting week in, week out. So I think, like, a Bundesliga team would be perfect for him. Like going back to Dortmund, I think that would be great for him if he wanted to go there. Maybe like a Leverkusen, like a lower end, not a top huge giant.
Yeah,
like
somewhere
Chelsea.
Where he'd be somewhat of a centerpiece.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that'll allow him to develop as well. You know, he'll get minutes. He'll get probably most of the time starting and. Yeah, I mean that's an important step in the development of pretty much every player. And,
yeah, I completely agree.
Pulisic's good enough to really be incredible. You know, he could be one of the next. There's some really promising youngsters for the American national team.
There is.
You know, that this is just like Pulisic. It could be one of those guys. He could be like a. I was gonna try to compare him to somebody, but I don't know if there's really been any Americans.
There really is
that
no like the only American who I think comes close to. I think Pulisic's already the best American ever, but. Clint Dempsey.
He won a Champions League.
Clint Dempsey had won a Europa League with Fulham, and he had 20 goals in the Prem that season, which is that's probably the best season ever done by an American.
Pulisic score in the Champions League?
He scored in the Champions League semifinal against Real Madrid, yeah.
No, it was in the...
In the final, he didn't score.
No, he didn't score in the final. Oh, it was Havertz. Yeah,
Havertz scored in the
final,
yeah.
Where am I thinking he... Oh, was it for the FA Cup?
FA Cup,
when he played against Arsenal. But yeah, and he scored in the FA. He scored the first goal, right?
In 2019-2020, when he came into the league... He finished the season with 23 goals/assists combined. That was a ridiculous season. Amazing season. He was only 21. But it just – when he – when he had that injury against Arsenal in the final when he tore his hamstring.
Yep. It was gruesome. It was not good to watch.
Ever since then, his explosiveness that you saw in his early Chelsea days, his late Bournemouth days, has just not been there ever since that injury. And I really think he can get back at it. But a hamstring injury to a player – He's a 5'7", you know, 150-pound winger. He relies on explosiveness. I don't know if he can ever get back to that. I don't know if he can ever beat these injuries, because it's been the last two years, ever since after that Arsenal injury, it's been reoccurring, and it's just kind of sad to watch at this point, because I really want him to succeed, but I just don't. I don't know with all these injuries if he's ever going to get over it, because, you know, he's a light guy, like... A big guy like Van Dijk goes over him, like, that's gonna hurt.
Yep.
And
yep.
He's injury prone. That's I don't feel like using that word, but he is prone to injuries.
Yeah, that was a really serious injury. Like,
it was.
When I watched that, when I saw that happen, you know, if you
he was throwing goal
Remember, yeah, he was through on goal. Probably about, I'd say, like, what, 10 feet before he reached where he was about to shoot it. And then you see his face. He starts screaming and grabbing. And he continues to run. He continued to run and try to get the shot off. But, I don't know. That's such a sad thing.
And it is.
I'm seeing the same thing right now with Emile Smith-Rowe, which is really upsetting.
I love ESR too.
He's the best right now. He's the lead scorer. He's the lead scorer for Arsenal. 9 goals and 2 assists.
So good.
And 3 of those games were 3 games in a row. He was subbed on after the 65th minute and he scored.
And one of them is against Norwich when I was watching with you.
That's right. Yeah. That is just the best thing. You know, a guy who came up through the Arsenal Academy who's always wanted to play for Arsenal, and he's helped Arteta build this squad now. This squad where the average age of the player is like 23, 24.
That's really good. Yeah,
I think it's the second youngest or the youngest starting roster on average of any team in the PL.
How many academy players do you guys have starting for you right now?
Saka, Emile Smith Rowe, Martinelli. Tierney wasn't academy. Lokonga was not. Lokonga was France. Or was he academy?
Lukonga might have been academy, actually.
I think Lukonga might have been academy.
So, 4 players?
Rob Holding.
Yeah, Rob Holding.
Holding came up through the academy.
Even though he's not great, but...
He's okay. Hey, honestly, he's...
He is an academy player, though, yeah.
He's very average. I would say he's a very average player.
Right, that's a good rating.
Yeah, he's reliable. That's the thing. I really like that.
I think for Chelsea...
Gabriel? Oh, no, he's not.
Gabriel's not. You guys purchased him from Flamingos, I believe, in Brazil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. We wanted a Vlahovic. Oh, man, the Fiorentina.
Oh, yeah, the guy went to Juve.
Yeah, he went to Juve. Yeah. Oh, man, that would have been perfect.
I know, Sean Duffy.
I was just waiting. Oh, yeah, of course he does. Sean's coming. We have to have Sean call in at some point. Another time. But what's the time difference?
It's 6 hours.
For anyone wondering, we're talking about our friend Sean Duffy. He's abroad right now. He's in Spain. We're going to try to figure out a way to get him to call in a future episode. But I think it's 6 hours?
It is 6 hours.
So it's going to be like 11 o'clock there?
He could call in one day.
I don't know. We might be able to. We'll try to work it out with him. But
yeah. But anyways, you guys really wanted him, right?
We needed a striker. We don't have a striker. And finally, we have a dude who's 21 years old.
Right.
He's tall. He's a prolific goal scorer. And he's looking to leave his team.
Yeah.
And we're like... This is it. This is exactly what we need right now. Another young player to build the squad out of and just work our way up.
Right.
And the Arsenal team was in talks with him. You know, they were putting out... I felt like it was close to being a closed deal, and it wasn't at all. Not even close. All of a sudden, I see him sign for Juventus.
Yeah. I remember...
Stabbed in the heart.
I remember, what was his name? Fabrizio Romano? Do you know the prominent... that big reporter? Fabrizio Romano. He's like the biggest reporter when it comes to transfer news.
Okay.
But anyways, I remember him. He said that the Arsenal was really close in getting him, and then Juve hijacked it last minute. So
I know
that was crazy.
Just sad. It's all right. We'll just deal with Lacazette.
You'll deal with
Eddie and Ketia. Okay. I don't want to play Eddie and Ketia.
Lacazette's
anymore.
Been like. Remember in 2017 when Man U got Lukaku. Chelsea got Morata and Arsenal got Lacazette, and we were all debating who's going to be the best out of the three.
Yeah,
remember that? That was
yeah.
It turned out to be Lacazette, I guess, because Lukaku left, and Morata, I don't even want to speak on him. He was awful for
Morata
us.
Was just he was atrocious. Awful. We don't even have to say his name. It's okay.
He was an awful striker. Chelsea really haven't had a great striker since Diego Costa.
That's fair.
He was a dog back in the day.
He was. He had too much. I don't know his. Some of the things that he did on the field, his temperament was.
He was
rough.
Yeah, I know.
He would really just lose it on players.
He bit players. Like,
yeah,
he
I know.
Did, like,
I,
what
I, yeah.
Suarez did and stuff. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I don't know what on earth would drive a person.
A player.
To bite. To you are playing a game that people play, like kids play. It's a game that everyone loves, and it's watched by. Millions and millions of people all the time.
Right.
And so basically on one of the biggest stages or platforms in the entire world, you decide to bite another person.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I get it. You get in the moment, but like hit him. Smack him. Don't bite him.
Yeah, Suarez, I remember he bit Patrice Evra.
Yeah, he bit Chiellini as well
in the World Cup. Yeah, and there was no VAR at the time, so he just played on.
That's two right there. What is he doing?
Like, what is he trying to do there? Like, what's his end goal there? It doesn't make any sense.
He just needed a mid-game snack.
I guess so, yeah. Some of the antics some of these soccer players do are just crazy. Like, you know, millions are watching this.
Yeah, exactly. I know. But yeah, I guess, you know, it. The public eye, it causes you to do some pretty dumb things.
Right, yeah.
You think about guys like Conor McGregor as well. And this is very far off, but like he
loves that, though.
Yeah, true. But the crazy things that he's done that are just so inappropriate, like unexcusable. Right. You see he leveled an old guy in a bar. There's a video of it.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
You know, like some, you know, famous dude.
I know. People aren't going to talk about that. It's the same thing that a lot of the soccer players do.
Yeah. I know. I remember Harry Maguire. He got arrested in Greece.
Yeah, that's right. Remember he got in a fight, right?
He got in a fight at a bar in Greece. And he came back, and Man United did not punish him. They just gave him the captain armband right back. And it was just like, really, like, you know, like you need to make a role model for some of these guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. These are players that, and I hate to say it, you know, these guys have to be role models.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they want to be or not. When you take on the responsibility of being a professional soccer player, which millions of children all across the world, that was me at one point.
Yeah.
We look up to these guys. I idolize these dudes. Like Mesut Ozil was like someone that I've always wanted to meet, and someone that I like, you know, you have to take this into consideration. You know, there's eyes on you now. You're not just playing for you.
Back on Mesut Ozil, though, I can't pronounce the name.
Fenerbahce.
Yeah, you know, the Turkish league.
Though. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard he's. I'm glad that he's in his like home nation.
Though. Yeah, me too. He's doing all right. Yeah, he's not doing great.
He's not doing great, but
he's doing probably middle of the road.
You know, he was washed when his Arsenal career was done. Like
no, but it was and it wasn't. You know, the reason. Do you know the reason why he was
pushed out? Right.
Yeah, he was pushed out
by Arteta. Unai Emery, right?
It was Unai Emery, but it was also Kroenke.
Kroenke, yeah.
So he came out in support of the Turkish Prime Minister.
Oh, I remember that.
He came
yes,
out in support
yes.
of the Turkish Prime Minister publicly, which, yes. whatever, that's fine. He's allowed to do that. And they just started phasing him out. They gave him less. They never gave him a send-off. They never gave him
The treatment that the club did, I remember this because back in 2019, his last season there, he actually came out in support of the Muslims in China. And
Kroenke, yeah.
Yeah, remember that?
Exactly,
and
yeah.
And Kroenke just like shunned him from the team and didn't give him any. Yeah, it was,
I couldn't believe
They made him leave the club. And
he was literally an Arsenal legend.
Yeah.
He really is, and he has become one. And he didn't even get
just the mistreatment of him, like one of the best players in your history.
Horrible.
And
you're just
forced that you forced him out like that.
He did such incredible things for Arsenal.
He did.
I feel bad. I mean, so many of the fans. If you talk to probably the vast majority of Arsenal fans, they're going to say the same thing. You know,
right.
We did Ozil wrong.
Yeah,
like he deserved way better than the way that he was treated, and that's not necessarily the fault of the fans. That's unfortunately the fault of the management, the ownership.
Yeah, Kroenke is. I know we talked about this before, but Kroenke is just, in my opinion, one of the worst owners in the league.
Yeah, he's not. Obviously, he doesn't care enough. You know?
He doesn't care.
I've watched interviews with him where he. Everything that he says in these interviews, of these Arsenal like talks that he does, it's rehearsed. It's practiced. There's no chance that any of it is genuine.
Yeah.
You know, you watch him and he's just like, he's everything. His face down to his teeth and wherever his hairs are is perfect. You know, he's just doing it all for a show. He doesn't care. It's money. That's all it is. It's just more money.
Yeah. I know something that bothers me in American sports. I don't know if they do this. They might do this in a European sports too. But when the owners get to touch the trophy before everyone else, Kroenke went on stage at the Super Bowl yesterday, got the Rams trophy and held it up before any of the players, before like Cooper Kupp, who got the MVP, Stafford, just, like all
ridiculous.
Those guys. I'm glad they don't do that in European sports, because if Arsenal fans saw Stan Kroenke holding a UCLA trophy, they would go
Kroenke
crazy.
Kroenke out would be the only thing that anybody would be saying, which is what a lot of people are saying right now anyways. So.
Yeah, I know. But
you can go on pretty much any one of the Arsenal Instagram posts
and
you'll just see,
Kroenke
out. Kroenke out.
Yeah. He's a ridiculous owner. I think I'd love to visit the Emirates Stadium though, like one day in the future. Cause
that's a dream, man.
It is a dream.
I've never even seen. I just want to see a Premier League game.
You do.
Period. I've never seen one before.
I've seen one Premier League game. Crystal Palace Chelsea in 2015.
Ooh.
We lost actually.
Oh no.
It was 2-1, but who scored for us? Diego Costa scored for us, and Hazard went out with an injury. It was tough to watch, not gonna lie.
I was able to see Arsenal play. International friendlies.
Right.
It was Arsenal versus Real Madrid, and ooh, that was awesome. I think it ended in penalty kicks.
Okay.
Which was
it in New York City or
No, it was in
MetLife.
In Maryland?
Maryland. You drove to Maryland?
Yeah, so we went to my uncle my uncle lives down there. My uncle and aunt and cousins live down there. And me, him, and my dad went to Arsenal Real Madrid game. And that was probably one of the best
experiences.
Probably one
of
the best experiences in my life.
Sports.
You know, to watch, like, seeing guys like Marcelo. You know, I never expected that they would have the big guns come to these games and play.
Same, because you would think they.
I would think it would just be like subs. Yeah, it would be youngsters to give them playing time. And you're seeing like Gareth Bale and Marcelo and Casemiro and Toni Kroos and. Who else was there? Oh, Ramos was on, and God, it was so great.
So in New Jersey, it was the summer of 2017. Mo Salah had just signed for Liverpool, and he was doing his debut game in the U.S. for at Red Bull Stadium in Hoboken. So I actually ended up going to that game, and I saw Mo Salah had a brace that game, and they won 4-3. And I'm like, I heard these British people behind me who. Were just in the U.S. for, I guess, business or something. And they were like, this Mo Salah guy is going to be an all-time great. And I doubted that. I did not think Mo Salah was going to be anything.
Yeah,
and
you're going to start eating those words as time passes, man.
He's the best player in the Premier League.
Filthy. Yeah. He's incredible. Yeah, he's an incredible player.
That was a great game, though. Tottenham, Harry Kane scored twice for them that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they ended up losing 4-3, but it was a great game. So it was a friendly, but, you know, I love watching those friendly games.
Yeah.
Still, so it's great when the Premier League teams come and visit the U.S.
I absolutely agree. I want to talk a little bit about the Wolves. The Wolves, man.
The Wolves. I know they're
Adama disappearing and headed out. And how do you feel? What do you think is he looked good in the first game.
I think Adama is a horrendous player.
Oh yeah.
I do not think he's good at all. He is a right winger who people hype him up because he's got, let's be honest, like he's probably the strongest player.
Definitely.
People hype him up because he's fast. His physique is incredible.
Yes,
and he just
you can't argue with his garbage record. It's so bad. Was it last season? He was 30 appearances, no goals.
Or 181
goals.
Oh my God, he's horrendous. He's no output whatsoever. He was starting for Wolves every week on the wing, and he would show random flashes of brilliance sometimes. But he had one goal the whole season.
I know.
He's not a good player.
It's too bad. You know,
he
has the ability.
And then he goes to Barcelona. He gets an assist the first on the debut.
Yeah, I know. Maybe, it really could have just been a fluke. You know, it could have just been a part. Because
maybe he's a good player. I don't know.
He has the ability. He absolutely has the ability. You know, he'll cut through like two defenders and then just put the ball
random
places, not on the target.
Oh, yeah. He's the best. In the Premier League last season, he was the best dribbler. Most successful
dribbles. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I don't really know.
He's fun to watch. I'll give you that. But he just has no output, and I think that's the problem with him.
Yeah. Sorry, somebody texted me about. Yeah, that's true. I want to I want to talk a little bit about Podence. I think he needs to go. He is too talented.
Yeah.
Not that Wolves are a bad team by any means.
Wolves are in what? They're in like fifth. They're in seventh right now.
They're low. They're right out of the fourth place race right now.
Right.
But he is incredible. He really is. Every time I watch him play, you know, he reminds me a little bit of Messi. He's short, stocky, low to the ground, and the way he moves is very fluid. And he just cuts. He does a lot of cuts.
He's a great player. Yeah.
And his set pieces are ridiculous. His crosses are incredible.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. I think Podence will be great in some other team. But it was great talking about the state of English football today. I think we covered a lot. So, what about you? What do you think of thoughts about today?
No, this is great. You know, I'm very happy we were finally able to do this. I look forward to next week.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Next week we'll talk about this weekend's games and some more things on English football. But thank you, Josh. It was a great show.
Thank you, Garvin as well. William Garvin, that's my co-host. My name's Josh Pinton. You are listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio in Eastern Pennsylvania. This was Off the Pitch, and until next time.